That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. This is Brady and Walker. Watch it on Sportsnet 360. Hear it on sportsnet.ca/590. And Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, welcome to the show. It is Brady and Walker, the day after Canada Day, July the 2nd, our 1 o'clock hour, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and Sportsnet 360. What are we going to talk about? You know what the big news over the last 24 hours was. It's Phil Kessel, and what to make of the Phil Kessel trade. We'll try to answer that for you today. And what did we learn? Well, what we learned was this. This ended up being a no-win situation for the Toronto Maple Leafs. What they had was a very good player, a gifted scorer, one who unfortunately was not going to fit into the culture of this team moving forward. But here's where things really got tricky. Not only did Phil Kessel not fit in here moving forward, it turned out there was absolutely no way that he would ever be allowed to play one more game in the blue and white. This was the point that we debated for months. We knew the Leafs preferred him gone, but could they wait until the best possible deal rolled around? Turns out they couldn't, and the end result is an underwhelming return. If you liked Phil Kessel, you won't like this trade. It just turns out the guys in charge really didn't like Phil Kessel, not one bit. I don't think Kessel was the complete cancer he was made out to be by some here, but I also don't think this guy was totally benign either. Listen, Kapanen, Harrington, and a first-round pick, nice pieces to throw into this group of 21 and unders the Leafs are slowly stockpiling. Did they win this trade, though? In terms of value, almost assuredly not. But yesterday, it did turn crystal clear that the Leafs probably would have moved him for less.
This is Brady and Walker. Online at sportsnet.ca/590. On TV at Sportsnet 360. And on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Got something to say? Say it on Twitter at Brady and Walker. Or text 590-590. Now here are Greg Brady and Andrew Walker.
It is that show. Welcome to it. 1 to 4 Eastern Time. We thank you for finding us. Greg Brady, Andrew Walker. You can find us on Twitter at Brady and Walker or at Fan590Walker or at BradyFan590. And, of course, simulcast on Sportsnet 360. So, yeah, yesterday afternoon, people are settling into their seats. I can only imagine thousands, tens of thousands of people finding out at a baseball game, of all places, that Phil Kessel was traded. What were we about? 15 minutes before opening pitch, things started to whir a little bit in the machine. Nick Kiprios breaks the news on Sportsnet. And then really all the pieces didn't come together. For example, we didn't know about a second-round pick going back. Tyler Biggs in the trade, Tim Erickson in the trade. We really didn't know all that till well after 2 o'clock. Kind of like P.A. Parento's AAV. There were some things that just were like, boom, this is it, this has happened. And there were some things that were rather slow developing. But they all, like, I don't know what the second biggest story of the day was in the NHL next to Phil Kessel.
The Brandon Saad news from the day before was quite big. I guess Mike Green or Andre Sequeira, one of those two. But yeah, there was one story here, and then everything else kind of filtered out. But that was the question that people are going to ask today. Could you have gotten more for Phil Kessel? But the way this went down, Greg, I'm asking a different question, and which is, would the Maple Leafs have traded him for less?
Yeah.
And you get the impression that they might have. Like, if this deal wasn't on the table, it might be, like you see on Craigslist, like OBO or best offer. That might have got Phil Kessel out of here.
This is the one thing I can't criticize the Maple Leafs for, and that's if they have decided, you have to give this management group a chance. Chances are important in life. You got to give this grouping an opportunity here. This isn't the old guard. This isn't Nonis Poulin and Loisel. This isn't Burke and Nonis. This isn't John Ferguson. So when this group decided, and I think you're right, and I think I'm right, and it started to build up over the last few days, unequivocally, Phil Kessel has played his last game as a Toronto Maple Leaf, then my concept that get him back in, see how he wants to play for Mike Babcock, Let him score some goals.
Turn into a moot point, right?
And then unleash him. Yes, you'll have fewer suitors. Everyone told me that yesterday. Of course you're going to. I got it. Yeah, cap space gets eaten up, and teams go fishing elsewhere the rest of the summer. No pun intended. Kessel likes to fish. And apparently eat hot dogs at 2:30 every day. My, like, honestly, I'd love that. If I knew the same vendor, if I had a vendor just within a walk of my house, not now and then the ice cream truck comes by and I can't stop him in time. But the bottom line is you've got, they decided this was up to them. So at that point, though, from Friday night and you and I talking to other people and piecing some of this together and reading some of the stories, it became obvious this was either Toronto is going to bluff that they've got other teams really involved and really intrigued and really in the mix, or and they'll win that bluff and Pittsburgh will be like, all right, here's Pouliot and here's we'll think about Olli Maatta and we'll get back to you. Jim Rutherford didn't have to do that. He was able to wait the Leafs out. They didn't want this done on July 4th, July 8th, July 15th, July 22nd. And your commentary was bang on. If you're a Kessel hater, you don't care as much about the return, and you're not allowed to scream about it. If you said, get him out of here no matter what, you can't scream about the return. This management group can't scream about the return if it doesn't go their way in two or three years, because they had an opportunity to wait this out, value him back up, and see if there were some bigger fish that were going to bite in January, February, if you were so desperate. And now they've got, boy, do they have called. What happens to Tyler Bozak? What happens to Joffrey Leupel? Are these players even, what's their value without Kessel? I know Leupel's played a bunch without Kessel, but Bozak hasn't played very much without Kessel. What's their value on a Maple Leaf club without him? Yeah. I don't know. We could very well find out. We might not.
And there's a couple things here, too. People wondered why this wasn't done the night of the draft. Well, if Pittsburgh was the big buyer here, and it turns out that it might have.
Nobody wanted more. It doesn't seem like
it. Might have just been Pittsburgh. This didn't have to be done the night of the draft, because guess who didn't have their picks? Pittsburgh. They didn't have their picks in the draft. They didn't have the first. They didn't have the second.
David Perron trade.
Sure. So it wasn't imperative that Toronto do this deal to get a pick on this past Friday night. Now listen, the return's not nothing. Kasperi Kapanen is a good prospect, the best forward prospect that Pittsburgh had. I like Scott Harrington. He's not as sexy or has the pedigree of an Olli Maatta or even a Derek Pouliot for that matter. But Mark Hunter had that guy in London. We saw him at the World Juniors a few years ago. And then the first round pick next year, you were never going to get a lottery type of pick in a Phil Kessel deal. It was never going to work out the way that the Tyler Seguin deal did for the Boston Bruins.
I agree with everything you're saying. The irony of it is that 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when Brian Burke makes this deal,
lottery
you might
protected.
Have wanted a lottery protect it, just in case you finish 29th with your new toy you're second last in the league. And then at the very least, you can take Tyler Seguin and say, guess what, Bruins? You lose. You'll get the first round pick next year. And, well, they already had next year. You'll get the 2011 and 12 first round picks instead of the 2010 one, which was a gold ticket. It's irrelevant. I love people defending that. Maybe they're just Leaf fans in general and the faces are painted, but it's like, yeah, well, Sagan's not even with the Bruins anymore. It's irrelevant to the process of the trade at the time. If I told you that the pick was going to be second overall and the guy's probably a future Hall of Famer, start feeling bad. And then when I tell you Phil Kessel's only ever going to play 7 playoff games with the Maple Leafs, and yet he's going to be healthy also his entire Maple Leaf career, he's got a consecutive game streak that may not be broken by anybody in the next decade.
He wasn't the only player involved in a Leafs transaction. Daniel Winnick is back on a 2-year term. He's going to join us in about 6-7 minutes from now. Also, we'll get a little further, a little deeper into this deal, some of the pieces that we're moving around. Tom Fitzgerald is the Pittsburgh Penguins' assistant general manager. He'll join us at 1:35. But the takeaway to me, and I guess if you have one criticism of this Leafs deal from a management perspective, and to your point, it's that they didn't bluff well.
They
enough,
didn't bluff very
right?
well. No.
Because they knew deep down that Phil Kessel was never going to play another game here, and they had to get the best possible return they could, but they couldn't afford to wait on it. And it turns out that was the best value out there. Would you rather have that return or, let's say, the return Chicago got for Brandon Saad? I think it's quite similar. They bring in Anisimov. Marco Dano is a former first-round pick, and Jeremy Morin.
You name me the last time you know, your recall on this stuff's great. You named me the last time a player was rushed out so quickly. Like, in a weird way, Columbus had Nash says he wants out. They had a chance to take their time. Vancouver had a chance to take their time somewhat with Kessler. Everybody knew Buffalo was going to trade Ryan Miller.
Jeff Carter in Columbus, maybe, but that was midway through the season, and it felt like it was done pretty quick.
It was done quick. But you know, assets. Yeah,
you know what? Columbus did actually not bad on the deal, all things considered.
Yeah, but there has outside of holdouts, and we rarely see that anymore. I mean, you know, we used to see more holdouts 20 years ago.
Danny Heatley in Ottawa, right?
Danny Heatley in Ottawa turns
down the deal to Edmonton. They end up sending him to San Jose.
Yeah, to get that deal done. I suppose they had to hustle, and they wanted to get it done before training camp. I feel like that was done right before training camp started, first week of September in 09 to get Danny Heatley out. So it's really rare, but the Leafs just weren't. I mean, what are we supposed to do? What are fans supposed to do? Talk the Leafs into letting Phil Kessel play 20 games? The decision was made. It's sort of like, hey, you know, hey, honey, come on. You know, we had some good time. No, I'm sorry. We're not giving it another couple weeks. I know when we're done, and we're done.
But
and,
I don't move into my new apartment for 3 weeks. I need to sleep on the couch. No, you can't do that.
And Phil Kessel may have been equally done. Phil Kessel was not going to get out in front of a microphone or even let it leak that he felt the way Ryan Kessler did or Rick Nash did.
But he didn't like getting in front of the microphones at the best of times.
But you do hear the drumbeats that that Kessel was fed up, and there were a few breaking points and moments last year. A lot of people who wrote, you know, we talked about it on the air in the mornings way back when. We talked about the salute gate, and a lot of people have, again, not just fingered Dion Phaneuf, but Phil Kessel as being the two guys that said, this is getting done the next time we win, and everyone's doing it, whether you think it's right or not, and whether there's going to be repercussions or not. And even in the Rosie DiManno article, like, Shanahan was apoplectic after this happened. You know, this early in, he's here a couple months, and it's like, now I got this fire to put out. Right. And Kessel was one of the leaders of it.
Now, Phil Kessel, he didn't deserve everything he got here. I'd be the first to say that. You'd be the first to say that. I mean, even today, like, you read the Steve Simmons article this morning. The first half of it is fat jokes, right? And I like Steve Simmons' stuff, and you're allowed to share that opinion. Did Phil Kessel was he the perfect example of commitment, fitness, and dedication, and leadership, and all that? Of course he wasn't, and he was your best player, he's your highest paid player. But we all came to the consensus, like, this wasn't even a hey, let's take phone calls. Is Phil Kessel a leader or isn't he? No, he's not. Right? He's not a leader. He never was. He probably never will be. It doesn't mean this isn't a fantastic trade for the Pittsburgh Penguins. They get a guy that's going to score 35 goals there, minimum, at $6.8 million a season.
But what I'm wondering is, when's the next time you're going to get a guy score 185 goals in 600 games for your franchise?
It's
560 games for your franchise. And, you know, his full season's 30, 32, 37, 37. And yes, last year, 25. You know who else fell off a cliff last year? Every single Maple Leaf had a disappointing offensive season. James Van Riemsdyk's better than a 56-point player. Nazem Kadri's better than a 39-point player.
Sure.
So everybody outside of maybe Cody Franson's 55 games, you look at the offensive numbers, and they all they all fell into a crevice.
Now, that said, you can be underwhelmed with this Kessel trade. It was a harsh, stark reality of what the situation was. From a positive standpoint, I really like what the Leafs did in free agency yesterday. Like, heading into it, so we're chatting on Tuesday about, you know, who are your targets? And your targets are those low-risk, low-term, low-dollar, bounce-back candidates to come in, maybe insulate a little bit some of the younger players and guys that you can flip again at the deadline, because we all know this is not going to be a playoff team. I thought they cornered the market on those type of guys pretty well
yesterday.
Unlike
what the Sabres did. And maybe there was a master plan to what the Sabres did with longer deals and longer term. And you know, could we debate whether they got better players last year with the guys they got? They got some guys more at the end of their rope in Gionta and Georges, but
those were more for insulation than they were for, say, quick flips, right?
But yeah, that's what I guess what I'm saying is they were long-term deals. Yesterday, I don't think it's been written anywhere, the Leafs didn't hand out a 3-year contract. 2-year deal for Winnick. Obviously, they get Smalling on his last year, the former Kitchener Ranger who played with Kadri when Kadri was just 15-year-old, 16-year-old. P.A. Parenteau on 1 year, Mark Arcabello on 1 year, and obviously that's not free agent signing, and Matt Hunwick over 2 years. But there's not, even last year they had to give Stefan Robita 3 years, and he's 39 next year. So there was none of, it was really responsible shopping for the Maple Leafs, just like, I think the only thing you could say about them last summer when there was still, Andrew, a window of hope that maybe some guys would get their game together enough was, hey, we can handle. If David Booth doesn't work out, you can flip him. Now, that was the one guy they didn't, but you can.
But Santarelli and Winnick.
You can do it with Santarelli, and you can do it with Daniel Winnick. And Winnick's, and we both think it's not a scenario where they may make certain trades. Joining us now on the line is the aforementioned New Leaf once again. Daniel Winnick joins us on Brady and Walker. Thanks for making the time to do this. We appreciate it.
Oh yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Do you still have anything to pick up in Pittsburgh? It was such a quick stay, right? Anything? Do you still have?
Everything's moved out of there, so I'm all set.
And did you leave anything in Toronto 5 months ago or 4 months ago that is easily now accessible, like a storage bin or anything like that?
Well, I have some stuff in my parents' house, so that's just always been there. I mean, we've pretty much packed up everything and left, so. We'll have to repack and remove to Toronto.
Were you always kind of hopeful? A lot of players say it, and I think we take them at face value because we have to. But you might bristle and roll your eyes and go, "Oh yeah, sure, that guy wants to go back to that place." But was this always even in the back of your mind that this would be a fit, that you were ready to see through the rebuild, and that you were an effective enough player here, you were a popular player here, that you wanted to make a bigger commitment, and you were pleased the Leafs wanted to do the same?
Yeah, completely. I think I was hopeful from the moment I got traded that they would be in the discussion in free agency if I got there, and that's the way it worked out. My fiance and I, obviously me being a hometown guy, but my fiance really liked the city and enjoyed the organization and the fans, and I have the same sentiment as her.
Danny Winnick, our guest, Brady and Walker, he returns to the Toronto Maple Leafs on a two-year deal yesterday. How much of a sticking point, or how important was that second year of the deal to you? This time around, you don't feel like a one-and-done guy. I don't imagine you'd like to head into another trade deadline with the name, you know, theoretically on the shopping block again.
Yeah, I mean, having 2 years as opposed to one is always key, I think, for any player. No matter what team you go to, you always want a little bit of security, and I think that second year gives me that this time around. And I knew the scenario last year of me signing was probably as much more of a showcase contract than anything, which, you know, the media all talks about now is the guys who signed 1 year deals in Toronto. It's a showcase contract. So it's great to be a part of the team for another 2 years and help through the rebuild and help the young guys along the way.
You were a pretty early deal last year as trades went at the trade deadline a little before. When you left this Maple Leafs dressing room, what was the feeling at that time? I know it got worse after it turned into a bit of a death march, but what was the mood when you went to Pittsburgh?
Well, leading up to it, I think any time I've been on losing teams before, but there seemed to be much more trade talk around us last year than any team I've been a part of, and you could feel it in the room. You know, there's always rumors floating around. You know, Santo and Cody were traded before me, and then it's like, okay, who's next? And are there any big trades going to be done? And it brings some uncertainty into the room. And then David Clarkson got traded just after me, so I think that was kind of eye-opening of, hey, one of our bigger-name guys just got dealt, and who knows who's left? And I obviously can't speak to what happened after I left, but I thought it was a good room before just – I thought there was a lot of tension in the room just from trade talk.
And it had to be, Daniel Winnick, our guest, Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, had to be the stability with the coach as well. I mean, there's an accomplished coach, there's a Stanley Cup winner, but even from game one, maybe even he heard the footsteps. When they fire your assistants, you can imagine that's about the last thing, that's about the most important thing to a head coach is who he turns to on the bench. So right away, you guys are putting up results, really good ones, in November, December, and right around Christmas, and then boom, a few losses, and it's a brand new head coach. That doesn't help matters.
No, yeah, that's the first time for me to have to transition within a team with a coach, and it's not easy. I thought Pete and Steve Spott did a good job in the transition. You know, he definitely fixed parts of our games that were lacking. We just struggled to score goals when Pete took over, but I thought we were playing better as a whole, and we were just losing games, and it's never easy when that stuff happens. You know, it's never easy to see a guy get fired and then have to come in to adapt to a new coach.
So you played 58 games when it was all said and done in the Phil Kessel era, if you will, here in Toronto. Do you have any insight into kind of why this started to snowball a little bit for him and you know, leading up eventually to the trade yesterday?
No, I mean, I don't know. Like you said, I was there 58 games. I think Phil's a hell of a player. He's one of the best goal scorers in the league. He's proven that, and his numbers show that as well. And I was friends with Phil before he came to Toronto, and I really like Phil personally. And, you know, maybe it just stopped working in Toronto for whatever reason. And it happens with a lot of players. They end up being traded. And I think it's just the direction of the team is they want to get younger and shed salary and have flexibility going forward. And obviously Phil's is the biggest on the books for the Leafs. And I think they did a good job in the trade with Pittsburgh. And I think it's going to work great for Pittsburgh as well. Him playing with Sid and Gino, one of the two, he's going to flourish, especially not being the go-to guy who needs to score goals every single night.
So do you feel that your role changes? I mean, when you're a free agent coming here the first time, right, there's still designs in a playoff spot. Now is it more as a mentor? You said yourself, you can see the youth coming in. They just traded their highest priced guy. David Clarkson left after you as well. Do you come in with a different mindset this time around?
I don't think so. I think I go into the same mindset. I don't think the direction of the team should change the way I plan to play or carry myself in the room. I think I just got to do the same thing as I did last year. Be vocal when I can and help the younger guys out if they got questions and kind of help direct them in the right way which the coaching staff wants us to go.
You're reunited of sorts with Nick Spaulding. Tell us about him as a teammate for the games that you did play with him.
Yeah, Nick's a great guy in the room and very reliable player. Similar in a sense to myself. He's good in all three zones, can penalty kill, he can score chip in offensively, and he's just got a solid all-around game, and he's got a great hockey IQ.
One more thought about Phil in Pittsburgh. It's funny because, I mean, Sid's the best player in the world, and I don't know if it's a criticism, but people say he moves at such a fast pace that he's not the easiest guy to play with, but Phil Kessel can skate. Do you think that's a fit there?
I think so. You know, I had the chance to play with Sid when I was there, and it is a challenge at times, at least for me. Sid obviously deserved a better, more skilled winger than I am. But for whatever reason, we worked as a line, me, him, and Hornquist. But the challenge I found was, you know, Sid's the best player in the world, and I get the puck, and, you know, you see Sid, and your first inclination is always get the puck to Sid. And sometimes you try and make a play to Sid when it's not there, and I think that's just the hardest thing with playing with Sid is always want to get him the puck.
Yeah.
But he's a great distributor, creates a lot of room for his line mates. And, you know, with Phil busting down the wing for Sid, I think it's going to open up a lot of ice for Sid carrying the puck.
See, no criticism of your new bosses. I'd have asked for Sid in the trade. I mean, maybe they didn't think of that. I don't – maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I that's the first name. We welcome you back to Toronto. We hope the summer goes great in transitioning back with your fiance, and we'll look forward to seeing you in September. Thanks for doing this, and congratulations on being back.
Thanks, guys.
Daniel Winnick joining us on Brady and Walker. Yeah, he mentions, like, he's been on losing teams, but he was on real good Anaheim teams, real good San Jose team the one year with Todd McClellan. And
pretty good Colorado team, too.
Things were cut short.
At least an upstart Colorado team.
He's only ever been to the second round once. You think of all the guys that have hopped on for longer playoff runs for Pittsburgh and you know, just his luck, they happen to dive out in five games this year.
Now, I do think he's in a different category. He's not a one-and-done guy. They traded him at the deadline last year. I don't think they're going to do that to Daniel Winnick this year. But the name I really liked yesterday was the P.A. Parenteau.
I thought you would. Yeah, yeah.
This is a guy that, yeah, you can look and say, hey, you know, he did unbelievably well playing with John Tavares, and he got the big deal from Colorado, eventually goes to Montreal, and didn't have a good year last year. But you know what? He didn't play. His third line, fourth line, healthy scratch, finished the year with eight goals, had a couple in the playoffs. But this is a better player than that. So to get a guy like Parenteau, 1 year, one and a little, if you're Parenteau, you should want to play here. You know why? Because you're going to play top six. And come deadline time, he's going to have 20-some goals and 40-some points. And you just watch. The Leafs are going to be able to get a late first or an early second.
The one thing I thought, too, is I think this insulates them from, as we've talked about it before, and we lived through it with Morgan Riley. I was here for it for Shannon Kadri. I think this minimizes any debate about, what should we do with a 19-year-old Nylander? What should we do? You know, what should we do with Marner? I think those guys won't be here. I don't think there'll be much discussion about the plan.
I still think Marner's going to play.
Forget the year, he may be more NHL ready, but the bottom line is they filled spots.
But so don't forget, this is almost the thing I like the most about the Nylander-Kapanen duo. They can play in the American League, right? Most kids can't.
Yeah.
Most kids can't. Like, Marner can't play in the American League.
No, he's back to London or up with the big club.
Right. So that's I think Marner's gonna stick. Like, I think he's just that guy. He's gonna come. He's gonna get points. How can you send him
back? So because that option's there for Nylander, and we both saw him in playoff games, and we're like, there's still a little bit of great promise, still a little bit of development to come, and maybe the pace of the games and three a weekend, and maybe it caught up with him. He wasn't dealing with that in the Swedish Elite League.
Marlies might be a more exciting team to watch next
but
year.
I'll tell you, what, for Toronto now, I still look and I go, there has to be more moves. I wouldn't say a lot more. It's a hell of a statement if you're like, boy, we just have to change a lot of things. Employees we're about to trade, Kessel, Phil. That is all. It's not Simpson, Homer. There's more to, that's not, do you, he can't do you be think, the sole do you, departee, if you will.
But who else? Do you think Phaneuf's leaving now? I don't.
No, I don't. I don't. I think you have to make, Lupul and Bozak are the guys I think of. And everything else, for Jake Gardner, you have to make a hockey trade. You have to make a smart hockey trade if you're moving Jake Gardner. You have to make a smart hockey trade if you're trading Roman Polak, to be perfectly honest.
Well, Polak's a guy that's going to get moved sometime this year, for sure. Polak's going to be out. Parento's going to be out.
But it could
out.
Be midseason is what you're saying.
Yeah, or more like a trade deadline if that guy's healthy. But the difference is here is that there was obviously, what we learned yesterday, there was a rush to move on from Phil Kessel and get this done. The Joffrey Lupul, Tyler Bozak, I could be wrong, but I don't think management has anything innately wrong with those guys playing on the Leafs next year, at least for the time being.
Yeah. So it won't be official. It's everything in the NHL is official. Everything in the NBA can't be official until a week from today on July 9. But the deal is there and it is, as done as can be. And Damari Carroll, who was such a big part of a 60-win Atlanta Hawks team, playing from the small forward position, a real bear defensively, gets signed. God, he was making $2.5 million a year a couple of years ago, and he's going to be making 60 for four starting in the fall.
I'm still wrapping and we're going to talk at length about this Damari Carroll deal, what it means for Terrence Ross. We see Amir Johnson go out the door to Boston yesterday as well. I'm still wrapping my head around this new NBA world of money.
Well, it's really tricky to do because, like, Kyrie Irving's now the seventh highest paid Cav, and Steph Curry's the fifth highest paid Golden State Warrior. And obviously, Carroll by far exceeds Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan's biweekly paycheck starting in October.
And it's not, I know one has nothing to do with the other. I know they're not related, but, like, people here would just. Like, they crush Bozak for making $4 million. And I'm not saying they shouldn't. But Damari Carroll makes $15 million. Colby Rasmus patrolled center field for, like, $8 million. Baseball and basketball money is just, it's just so far gone.
That's the process. There's been one more big move today in the NBA, and that was Greg Monroe leaving the Pistons, signing a max deal with the Milwaukee Bucks. And Monta Ellis with the Indiana Pacers, who are losing David West and may not be done retooling for their squad now.
And that's some East moves. In Monroe, that was a name we kicked around a lot last year as a potential Raptor trade deadline acquisition, maybe even as a free agent. But, I mean, would we be jumping up for joy if we're talking Greg Monroe for Max here in Toronto? No. I don't know.
And if you missed it and you were cottaging or lighting off fireworks in the daytime yesterday, Amir Johnson signs a 2-year deal with the Boston Celtics. We'll talk a ton more NBA today, more on the Jays' lively bats, including Justin Smoke's 2 home runs at Rogers Center. Jays going for a split in the series tonight against the Boston Red Sox before 10 straight games on the road in the AL Central starting in Detroit tomorrow night. Our game tonight is on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Red Sox Blue Jays. Tom Fitzgerald, Penn's assistant GM, next. The fact that there's a lot of good free agents left on July 2nd, more than there have been in the last few years. We'll run some of them down and do best and worst. A lot more Brady and Walker to come. Thanks for sticking with us. It's Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 360.
Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Now more Brady and Walker. On your TV at Sportsnet 360, online at sportsnet.ca/590, and on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Tom Fitzgerald and a bit Penn's assistant GM. So stuff going down. Just a quick baseball note. Jose Fernandez is making his first start in about 16 months off Tommy John. He was the rookie of the year in 13. And he's only ever hit one major league home run until today, and it nearly sparked a major brawl. He hit it off Mike Minor and then pimped it. And Brian McCann was waiting for him and was basically blocking the way to the plate, so there was a scuffle. He hit one today off Matt Cain. No incident, although he was muttering the whole way around the bases. Don't do that. You'll get plunked next time.
So last year, when he did that, when he pipped his home run and there was that big brawl with Brian McCann, that was the night we were in the clubhouse of the LA Angels.
Yes, it was.
And
that's right.
I'll never forget it because they were
Josh Hamilton. Yeah, yeah.
They were so fascinated. They're all watching on the highlight screens. And anyway, yeah, today he's making news with his bat more so than his arm.
5-3 Marlins over the Giants. Couple other notables we'll keep our eyes on today. And by the way, just to note, some breaking news, I'm sure. More on top at the top of the hour. Martin St. Louis has called it quits after 1,134 regular season games and 107 in the playoffs. And of course, the Stanley Cup from 2004 with the Tampa Bay Lightning, a couple gold medals as well. So he calls it quits, decides not to. Don't know how, maybe we'll find out how close, whether he, it's just something even yesterday maybe triggered in him because he didn't announce it before yesterday. And I don't doubt somebody called his agent and said, what's the interest level? Because there's one of the guys that somebody would have loved to have grabbed at age 40. Joining us now is Penn's assistant GM, Tom Fitzgerald, who's kind enough to take some time on this Thursday. Did you put in an offer to Martin St. Louis? Tell us right now. You have to you have to answer honestly. No, I'm just kidding. You don't have to tell us.
How you doing, guys?
We're really good. A busy day for you guys yesterday, and it obviously made a lot of waves up here. This is obviously a transaction or an eventual transaction, Tom, that we felt like might, when we started hearing more about it, might have happened earlier. It's my perception is the Pens were, you guys were smart here, waited this out, and made a great deal for your hockey club. How is it viewed internally?
Well, exactly that. You know, we targeted players and felt that, you know, a top six winger was something that we really needed. You know, Phil Kessel, he fit that description for obvious reasons, for his ability to score goals, speed, hockey sense, ability to play with big-time players like what we have here in Pittsburgh, and just thought it would be a good compliment, good meshing catalyst type of player that can go with either one of our two guys.
When did talks kind of officially begin here? When did you guys as a group say, that Phil Kessel fits our needs, that is a guy that we need to have some discussions on?
I think it starts with both sides. You know, probably over the draft. You know, that's when the initial kicking of the tires started, and then it gets thrown around internally by both groups. You know, this is a trades like this are a little above our pro scouts because it's an ownership trade. You know, there's a lot of money involved. You know, when you talk about a whole organization being on the same page, that's really what has to happen, and that's what happened here in Pittsburgh. Everybody just, this is what's possible, and then you start talking about pieces. You know, Kim and Brendan went through it, and you know, here we are. You know, we got a dynamic goal scorer, and in return, you guys are getting. You guys are getting pretty good pieces, some good young players, along with a veteran like Nick Spaulding. So,
did you guys deal with untouchables? Was there a name that from day one, from minute one, it was, you know, any deal that we make, we're not involving player X?
You know what? When you talk about the type of player, the dynamic player that that Phil Kessel is or can be moving forward, who's shown that in the past, you got to be open to anything. There was, you know, again, Jim and Brendan did this deal, and, you know, every time it came back to the group, it was, you know, certain pieces, and they found a way to get it done. They found a way. Like, we felt that both Scott Harrington and Kasperi Kapanen were big-time prospects for us. Do we have a couple more in our stable? Yeah, we do, but we look at them all. We look at them as real important pieces to the Pittsburgh Penguins' future. And to get a Phil Kessel, a player of that magnitude, we also know that you have to give something that you really value. And those guys, we valued a lot. So this wasn't a, oh, yeah, you can have these two guys, you can't have those two guys. No, we didn't look at it that way. We basically looked at our whole stable of prospects as very good prospects for us that would garner attention from other teams. And these two guys were the guys that were put in this deal. And adding a veteran like Nick Spaulding, a versatile forward that is a coach's dream. He can do anything. He does everything right. Plays the right way. Mike Babcock will enjoy coaching next for sure. Who gets lost in all this are the pieces that came back to us as well. You know, Tyler Biggs and Tim Erickson. I mean, we're getting two former first-round draft picks that we can throw in and help get on the path to play in the National Hockey League.
Tom Fitzgerald's kind enough to join us. Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He's the Penguins assistant general manager, talking about the big Pens-Leafs trade yesterday. So I always feel like this comes up during trade deadline, but even when you've got an entire summer, then an entire training camp, then a preseason, we talk about slotting in hockey. Does this help everybody else on your forward front maybe slot down and be able to excel, either through, I guess I'd say, fewer minutes or better matchups, guys like Kunitz, Hornquist, Perron, even a Brandon Sutter who's breaking out? Does it help everybody else to increase this depth that, you know, it like I said, it might be less responsibility at times for a couple of them, but it makes you deeper and it's going to make everybody better. Chicago's been a great example of doing this the last few seasons.
You're bang on there. Our goal was to go get a top six winger. We got that in Phil, which helps us, as you mentioned. Yeah, it helps slot people into position that we believe builds depth in our organization, where we now look at our top three lines as very good lines that can help us compete for Stanley Cup, which then allows us to maybe have a kid push down in the American Hockey League and be able to just play in all situations and not have to feel that we have to slot him into this spot right here. He can grow at his own pace. It also gives us the flexibility to have competition spots within our organization. You know, whether it's second year guys coming up and playing games and gaining experience at the National Hockey level because they've deserved it and they earned it. It really helps. The trickle down effect is great, quite honestly. So there's a bunch of different valuable reasons why what Phil Kessel brought to our organization. It was slotting. It was allowing kids to develop at their own pace down the American Hockey League, and allowing, you know, those second, third year guys the opportunity to play NHL games.
So tell us a little bit about Kapanen individually. You took him 22nd overall a year ago. You go 1 year in the future, and where did he slot now to you guys, if you go back in that NHL entry draft? What is his ceiling to you?
I think you guys are getting a potential dynamic player. That's skating ability, puck protection strength, give a quick you stop and turn, and then he's got an unbelievable shot. Great release. And, you know, he came into our American Hockey League team first game. He scored two NHL goals that we just looked at each other and just looked at our hockey ops department in Wilkes-Barre and just said, well, you know, it was a wow. Mm. Wow. Now, we also got to remember he was only 18 years old, and he's still only 18 years old. I believe he won't be 19 till the end of this month. You look at his record, he hasn't put up the numbers that you think he's probably capable of, but he's played with men for a couple of years now. Right or wrong, That's where he's played. That's where his family chose to help his development, back home on his dad Sammy's team. But we saw a guy that has that potential dynamic quality to his game. And if this kid was playing, whether U.S. Junior Hockey League or even Canadian Junior Hockey League, I'd like to believe he'd put up some real big numbers.
Tom Fitzgerald joining us. So before you go, don't ask me how I know this, but the Pirates have a 10-game homestand coming up. When does Kessel throw out the first pitch at PNC? Because we want to be there. We want to see it. It's 60 feet 6 inches isn't easy. When any word on that yet?
That is way above.
Above you? It's above. It feels like it'd be way below, but if you say it's way above, okay.
It's way above. Way above my job description.
All right. Well, we've got to get Mario on after two. Okay. We'll try. Thanks for doing this. Really insightful stuff, Tom. And enjoy the rest of the summer. Congratulations on getting this done.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime.
Tom Fitzgerald, Penguins assistant GM. I don't know if Kessel ever threw a first pitch at Rogers Center. Maybe he did not.
I don't know how many Toronto Maple Leafs did. I know Michael Delzato did one time.
A lot of people making hot dog jokes in my headphones. I'm not going to repeat them on the air.
Right.
Listen, clones. No, it's not going to happen. No, Michael Delzato did, didn't he? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
The thing, again, Kapanen is the interesting guy here. And it's...
But not for next year, you don't think? I think it's a guy that can make a team? I don't know.
I don't know. Who knows? But I like that he can play in the American League. I like that a lot. I wish... I mean, it hurts junior hockey. But I wish first-round picks that are 18 coming out of the out of junior could play in the American League.
Yeah.
I really do.
There's been some flex. They flexed it a lot with Yuri Talusti, having him be able to play with the Sioux Greyhounds or with the Toronto Marlies when they drafted him in the first round. All right, let's do best and worst from last night in sports.
Best.
Scoring a goal.
And worst.
Scoring on your goal.
You know
with
what?
With Brady and Walker.
It's enough. That's where we're going to start.
Hey, listen, when you cheer for 11 countries at the Women's World Cup like Greg Brady does, you're bound to have some heartbreak. I'm sorry.
I know.
So you think you're setting yourself up for at least one of my teams is going to win? Guess what? A couple are going to have bad moments.
Now
and,
I know.
You reap what you sow.
Now I know who I'm rooting for on Sunday. This makes it really easy now.
Now you know.
Yep, yeah. That's right. All right, so we start with that worst loss. England knocked out of the Women's World Cup in heart-busting fashion. There's breaking and there's busting. They're in injury time with the Japanese team. And Laura Bassett tries to... I guess she was trying to kick it out of bounds. I don't even think she was trying to kick it over her net.
I thought it was a great shot.
It's a hell of a play. Maradona couldn't have done that in his prime. The women's game's come a long way. And she put it in off the top of the bar and it landed over the line and then kicked back out. It's the worst way. I can't think of a worse way. If a Canadian woman had done this, we'd have to shelter her.
No, we'd be
Sunday night's
we'd
loss.
Be talking about how proud we were of her that she tried her best.
You know
that's what?
What
we'd be talking
no,
about.
No, we would not. I would
You're
not,
right.
I don't pander like
the
that.
The women's game has come a long way. Like 5 years ago, there's no way that she picks the top corner like that. And she did yesterday.
So, and just time to strip her citizenship. We do it for a man. She's lucky she's not a Colombian man. That guy was killed in 1994.
Best Eskimar. Win. I'll give it to the Cincinnati Reds yesterday. So they beat the Twins 2-1, but it's more so in how they did it. Johnny Cueto got the win. 8 innings, 1 run allowed, doesn't walk anybody. He's 5-5 with a 2.84 ERA. Aroldis Chapman, a perfect ninth for the save. These are the two guys that as soon as the All-Star break is over, the better they play, the more lucrative return you would think that Cincinnati's going to be able to get for them.
Best win, Yankees get a victory with 5 shutout innings from Nathan Eovaldi last night. You know, he's either been very good, and then he runs into a pitch count, doesn't tend to go deep in games. He's had a couple blowout games that have dinged his ERA, but maybe they have something here with this player. And as a team...
He reminds me of Drew Hutchison. He has Drew Hutchison numbers.
Yeah. That's a great example. But as a team, we all have to admit the Yanks pitching has hung in a little longer and been a little better than we all probably thought in April.
Yeah, whatever. Worst player, Rick Porcello, just gets pounded by the Jays on Canada Day. That's not an enviable start, though. Coming to the Rogers Center roof open on Canada Day, not fun for
anybody.
Giant
flags. It's incredibly intimidating. It's so intimidating. Like, yeah.
Justin Smoke hit that one to the moon.
People
are
frightened of Canadians. All right, so we'll get more into the NBA issues and, of course, that of Damari Carroll for the Toronto Raptors all coming up next and Damian Cox next hour as well. It's Brady and Walker, 2 o'clock to come on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360.